Welcome back to another new NACE International podcast. My name is Ben Dubose, staff writer for NACE Publications. I write for Materials Performance Magazine, the official membership magazine of NACE, also Coatings Pro Magazine. Today's show, we're talking with a valued contributor to Materials Performance, that being Jack Tenney, MP Technical Editor. Jack, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing pretty well. Glad to get you on the show. And what we do as far as the MP podcast, for any new listeners, we talk to various experts within the corrosion control field. I certainly think Jack is one of those, and he helps coordinate our technical articles in the MP magazine. That's one thing that we want to do as far as the MP interview series, go into some of these technical articles, get a little bit more background and depth for those of you that are listeners. Hopefully some of you are readers as well. So Jack recently wrote an article for us. He typically helps compile these, but he also writes some from time to time. And he had one recently about corrosion in Antarctica. So we're going to be talking about that in a little bit. But before we get to the article itself, I want to give Jack an opportunity to, for anyone who doesn't know him already, to give a little bit of background about his career and recent times in corrosion. So Jack, aside from your role as the MP technical editor, give our audience some background about your history in the field.
Well, my background academically is in physical chemistry, but my first real job after graduation was I got hired by the Civil Engineering Department at my alma mater, Illinois, to do research on cement chemistry. And it was about the same time that the state of Illinois discovered that bringing oceans to the highways of Illinois in the form of de-icing salts coming off of the back of trucks during the wintertime was not only corroding out the chassis of the Chevys and Fords, but it was also tearing up the bridges. And so that is how I got involved in corrosion a long time ago, and have basically been dealing with the crumbling infrastructure ever since. I chaired the first NACE technical committee that wrote the first standard on applying cathodic protection to concrete, to steel and concrete.
I know you've looked at corrosion in a number of environments, and today's discussion is a pretty unique one, in my opinion. You don't see that many articles about corrosion in Antarctica. So we're talking about, you know, as you called it, corrosion in a polar desert. For anyone who wants to call it up, go to materialsperformance.com. You can find it under topics, materials, selection, and design. It was also in one of our recent MP print issues, so if you want to read it, again, while you're listening or after you listen, that's how you can find it. But Jack, if you could, before we go into the article itself, just tell some background about why you wanted to dive into this topic, in which it's such a unique region, there's probably not a ton of articles out there about it. So how did this idea come to you?
Well, the idea came to me a long time back from a person who preceded me as chair of the NACE Publications Committee. That was something else I did some years back. But Frank Ann Sweeney, who had been chair of the Publications Committee, and he had taken a trip down to Antarctica, and that had initially piqued my interest. And luck of the draw of dealing with crumbling infrastructure, it has allowed me to travel to the other six continents on the planet. So I had one left to go. So I said, well, let's go down and see what's happening in Antarctica.
One of the interesting parts of your article, you mentioned that to control corrosion, it's very helpful to categorize the environment. When we're talking about the polar desert and this particular subject, what are the types of environments that need to be considered in your analysis?
Well, you have the macro environment, which would be a large scale. Say, okay, a macro environment could be the city of Houston or the city of Seattle. We'll call that the macro environment. But if I go to the northern suburbs of Houston, I don't see a lot of salt spray than I would if I get right down to the water. The same thing in Seattle, that if I move to the other side of the hills here, which are as high as Dallas is in Texas, where I'm sitting right now, I'm 20 blocks from sea level, but I'm already 840 feet in the air. We don't get much salt spray here, but down at the waterfront, they do. So that would get into the microenvironment, and then I would go to a particular location on a dock, and that would be the nanoenvironment. You have to consider all of those rather than I'm just in this particular environment. There's plenty of different environments corrosion-wise, within a city, and then if we go down to a single pier, there's going to be nanoenvironments on that particular pier that are going to have problems of why we see corrosion here, but we don't see it over there.
How much variance is there based on the location? For example, you mentioned, and it's right there in the headline, about this being a polar desert, but yet a lot of your infrastructure in Antarctica is near a more coastal location, and typically people associate coastal locations with a certain degree of corrosion due to the moist conditions. So how much variance was there depending on where you're looking on that continent?
Well, you would definitely, where you get to the coast, the continent essentially is a desert. And it's quite fascinating considering the vast majority of fresh water on the planet is in Antarctica in glaciers and ice. But it's a desert. They get less than 10 inches of precipitation a year. But if I'm on the coast, then because of the wind, you can get aspiration from the waves of getting seawater into the air, and that can be problematic. Likewise, because it's a desert, you have the penguin colonies down there. And penguins, like most birds, poop. And in a desert, it dries, and then it dries, turns to dust, and blows. And so then you get this corrosion fertilizer, if you will, being carried on the wind, that normally would not be the case if there was sufficient rain to wash it off and take it away.
That's pretty interesting. I would have never thought of that component to it. I think that's one thing that, at least for me, is a little bit surprising. Was there anything that surprised you in your analysis when you really dived into these angles?
Well, some of it was just simply seeing it. I had seen algae impacting snow down in California in some of the glaciers that shows up down there. But down in Antarctica, there's just all this watermelon snow. And really, it does. It looks like watermelon. And what's causing it is algae that's being fertilized by the penguin poop getting blown on the wind. But that same thing goes and gets stuck on the water tanks that are used and equipment that are used at the facilities that are down there trying to do research and gets into crevices and what have you. And then if you do get a little moisture in there, then you're at party time, corrosion-wise, especially when they're on the coast, that you've not only got the organics and the nitrates that are coming off of the penguins, you also get salt that's coming off of the sea that's also immediately adjacent. And so you've got penguins that are right in the middle of the research facility.
Are there any lessons learned from this that are applicable to regions outside of Antarctica? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening in our audience that certainly corrosion in a polar desert is an interesting topic, yet at the same time, it's not, at least it would not seem to be directly applicable to areas in the much more populated world. So when you look at your findings in this article, are there certain components that might be applicable to corrosion needs for other areas?
Well, absolutely. Take for example, Alaska. And one of the things folks think about in Alaska is they have very big tides. Well, they do in Southeast Alaska. But if we go to Nome, they have very small tides. They aren't very big at all. And there you have to deal with your, if you are doing cathodic protection to a bridge, which we did in Nome. We don't have to deal with the tides being problematic. We have to deal with ice flows being problematic. And so the equipment that you have to put in, essentially it's a large steel channel to run your cables down because the ice would rip conduit right off the pipe piles.
That's very interesting. I hadn't
You have to
considered.
understand your environment, and each environment is going to be different, but you have to make sure that you ask all the questions and hold deep in your heart that the most stupid question is the one that doesn't get asked. So, I mean, I've seen, all sorts of stuff that I wouldn't have inspect expected. Corrosion is a major problem in Lima, Peru, and you would think, well, why would it be there? It's a desert. It's a desert, but it's a very foggy desert, which so sounds sort of contradictory, but it's the nature of Lima, and they have specific corrosion problems, say like on power towers and other things, that are the fact that they're constantly sitting in the fog.
Just from a human interest perspective, how enjoyable was the trip? I'm guessing it was a pretty great and unique place to go, right?
It was fantastic. We went on a thing with I don't know if I can say it, but it was with National Geographic, so that the people who basically took us out, drove the Zodiacs, had masters or PhDs in relevant fields, whether it was marine biology, whales, geography, glaciers. And they were quite fascinating. And so what to me was quite interesting was the fact that myself, but also almost all the other folks who were there on the cruise leaned very heavily to folks who were in science or engineering or technology and were asking really amazingly deep questions for a cruise ship. So we didn't quite get into having calculus on questions being asked, but the questions were very deep and very serious.
Yeah, I bet it's again a once in a lifetime trip. It sounds like many of us won't get to go, but for those that do, it's certainly a great opportunity. It sounds like.
And just going there to get there, I had to go through Chile and Argentina. So I got to stop and visit and actually meet with some folks that I've learned through NACE in Chile and learn more about their specific corrosion problems, but learn it at a firsthand in an arm's length basis rather than just emails, between Seattle, and Valparaiso, Chile, which is a pretty long distance.
Is there anything particularly unique to the Southern Hemisphere? While we're talking about it, I'm just thinking out loud, but is there anything with regards to, you mentioned Chile, Argentina, anything particularly distinctive there that you might not see in the Northern Hemisphere?
Well, yes. One of the things that they have to deal with in some of their mining areas up north, it's a desert area, and again, you would think this wouldn't be particularly corrosive, but the soil resistivity in that desert is less than what you get in seawater because it's almost solid salt, but that's where our lithium comes from and other minerals. So that was quite interesting. Chile is the largest producer of copper on the planet, which is something that's used a lot. And they have their own unique copper corrosion issues and got to take a trip down to one of the copper mines and get to see some of that firsthand again because of this trip to Antarctica. It got me in touch with friends down there who were working on corrosion problems in copper mines, which provide copper for the world.
Very interesting. Yeah, I would love to go back. I went to Argentina a little over 6 years ago now on our honeymoon. We went to Buenos Aires, and it was a fantastic trip. I mean, a great, beautiful country, and certainly very different than here. It makes sense that they would have some relatively unique corrosion problems as well.
Oh yeah, and because we jumped off on the voyage from Ushuaia, Argentina, which is at the very tip end of the South American continent. It is basically the furthest south city on the planet, and it's glaciers and conifers. But so much of Argentina is fairly arid, pampas, and it's great for raising cows. You don't see so many fir trees and glaciers.
That's interesting. Jack, before we close out the podcast, for anyone listening that's interested in perhaps submitting their own technical article. We have lots of people who I'm sure they do their travels, they have their types of analysis. Besides your own corrosion career, you of course now are you're the MP technical editor. So tell anyone listening that's interested in potentially being an author for MP what the process is like and what some of the initial steps would be.
Well, we have our site online for submitting the papers, and that gets into what the length is and the number of references and some of the more mundane things on there. But topically, anything. I would like to see a few more ones which would be perhaps a bit more basic that would be helpful for our technicians as they're moving through their various NACE certifications to help them on that process, that it all doesn't have to be, writing for somebody, with a master's or a PhD. Write it for somebody who's got a community college education and is working as a technician on an offshore platform. I would love to see those as well as the ones that are a bit more pedigreed, shall we say.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's probably the direction that would make, I would say, the most universal benefit to our readers at MP. And for those interested, if you want to learn how to do that and see some other steps, you go to materialsperformance.com and on the top bar you'll see Submit Manuscript. You can open that up and then you'll see within that a link for Submit Your Paper Online. And that's our precise paper tracker system that we use for technical articles. And then, of course, for articles that are already published, such as the one we've been talking about, Jack Tenney's Antarctica Corrosion in a Polar Desert, you can go underneath topics. You can segment it by coatings and lining, cathodic protection, chemical treatment, material selection, so on and so forth. Jack's article that we've been talking about today is under materials selection and design, and you can read all about the corrosion in the polar desert of Antarctica. Jack, thank you so much for the time, and I look forward to having you back again sometime soon.
Great. Thanks so much, Ben.
No
Have a great
problem.
day. And the rest of you out there, have a great day and stay safe.
Always good advice these days. And folks, before we shut off entirely, again, materialsperformance.com, that's the website for MP. If you want more information besides technical articles, we certainly have a news section on there. You can also go to NACE.org. That's the website for the association and get regular updates there. Also, subscribe to the podcast if you have not already. Apple, Google, Spotify, all of your primary distributors, we should be on there. So subscribe, leave us a positive review. And if you don't feel like doing that or you don't have those applications, of course, you can find each individual podcast on materialsperformance.com and nace.org, among other locations. With that, I will close out. For Jack Tenney, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks for listening, and please come back soon for another podcast in our ongoing MP interview series at NACE International.